Have you ever noticed how, like, when you're trying to get something new off the ground, something you really care about, the advice is always make a business plan, project 5 years out. But what if, the future feels totally unpredictable?
It's like trying to forecast the weather a year in
It's
advance.
exactly like, good luck with that. So that's what we're tackling in this deep dive, right? How do we deal with that? We're looking at entrepreneurial search methods and design thinking. And we've got some readings here that really flip the script on that whole business plan obsession.
Yeah, we're not going to drown you in information. We just want to pull out those golden nuggets, those core concepts you need to wrap your head around this stuff.
That's the goal. So, listeners, get ready. We're about to explore effectuation and design thinking, two powerful approaches that offer a whole new way to think about entrepreneurial opportunities, especially when things are uncertain.
Because let's face it, uncertainty is kind of the name of the game these days.
Totally. So one of the big ideas that jumped out at me is that being an entrepreneur isn't just about like starting a business. It's more of a fundamental way of seeing the world, a way of thinking, and a bias towards taking action.
A way of life, almost.
Yeah, exactly. And the readings introduce this framework called head, hand, heart to understand the different aspects of what it takes to be an entrepreneur, right?
Right. So the head part is all about knowledge. Think textbook stuff, frameworks, strategic analysis, that kind of thing.
Okay, got it. So, like, understanding the business model canvas would fall under the head.
Exactly. Then you have the hand, which is all about practical skills and competencies. This is where things like writing, building, communicating, all those tangible skills come in.
So if I'm a coding whiz, that's my hand strength.
You got it. And finally, you have the heart. This is about your attitudes and mindsets, things like curiosity, resilience, passion. The inner drive that keeps you going.
The fuel, the fire in the belly. I love that. So for our listeners out there, think about your own strengths. Where do you lean? Are you more head, hand, or heart? Or maybe a mix of all three?
That's a great question to consider. And it leads us to one of the most important ideas in effectuation, which is this thing called the bird in the hand principle.
Okay, bird in the hand, tell me more.
So instead of starting with some grand, far-off vision, this principle says, start with what you have right now.
Okay, so not a 5-year plan, but more like a right now plan.
More like a what can I do today plan. It's about your time, your energy, your skills, your network, your character, everything you already possess.
So your human and social capital, not just financial capital.
Exactly. It's about leveraging those things to create something new. The readings have this really cool interactive example that contrasts this with traditional planning.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. It's like on one hand, you have imagine a future goal and then work backward to figure out how to get there. That's classic business planning.
Right. And then on the other hand, you have start where you are, not where you want to end up. That's the search-based effectuation approach. Totally different starting point.
It's almost like instead of saying, I want to climb Mount Everest, so I need to buy all this expensive gear and train for months, you're saying, I'm already a pretty good hiker. What nearby trails can I explore? And maybe eventually I'll find myself at the base of Mount Everest.
That's a great analogy. And it highlights the difference in the underlying logic. Traditional planning is all about causal reasoning. You have a specific goal and you figure out the steps you need to take to achieve it.
Cause and effect. Makes sense.
But effectuation, this entrepreneurial search discovery, is more about leveraging what you have now to create multiple possible futures. You don't necessarily know where you'll end up, but you trust the process.
So it's less about predicting the future and more about shaping it.
Exactly. It's about using your bird in the hand resources to navigate the unknown. And speaking of those bird in the hand resources, it's important to remember that it's not just about money, right?
Right. You mentioned it earlier. It's much broader than that.
Yeah, the readings break it down into three main areas: character, human capital, and social capital.
Let's unpack those. What exactly falls under character?
Well, character includes things like your interests, your values, your empathy, your integrity, your ability to connect with people. It's about who you are as a person.
Got it. So, like, if I'm super passionate about sustainability, that's part of my character resources.
Exactly. Then you have human capital, which is all about your education, skills, and experience.
So, things like coding, marketing, design, writing all fall under human capital.
Yep. And finally, you have social capital, which is about your network of relationships.
The people you know, the connections you have.
Right. It's about who you know and how those relationships can help you move forward. It could be from work, school, volunteering, anywhere you've built relationships.
So this bird in the hand idea really forces you to take stock of yourself, doesn't it? It's not just about what you have in your bank account, but also who you are, what you know, and who you know.
It's a much more holistic view of what you bring to the table as an entrepreneur. And the readings use this amazing analogy to illustrate the difference between this approach and traditional planning.
Oh yeah, the chef analogy. That was a good one. Remind me how that goes.
So imagine you have two chefs, a planning chef and a searching chef. The planning chef starts with a very specific menu in mind. Let's say they want to make coq au vin.
Fancy.
Right. So they carefully plan out every ingredient, every step, to perfectly recreate this classic dish. They need to buy very specific things.
That sounds a lot like a traditional business plan.
It is. Now, the searching chef is different. They open their fridge, see what ingredients they have, and then decide what amazing dish they can create with what's available.
So they're not limited by a preset menu. They're more flexible and creative.
Exactly. And that's what effectuation is all about. It's about using your available resources to create possibilities, even if you don't know exactly what the end result will be.
That makes a lot of sense. Now, it seems like this search-based approach is closely tied to certain entrepreneurial attitudes, wouldn't you say? Like, you need to be a certain kind of person to thrive in that environment.
Oh, absolutely. The readings talk about how being an entrepreneur is all about navigating constant change. And to do that well, you need to cultivate specific attitudes.
Like what? Give me some examples.
Well, first of all, you need to be alert, aware of what's happening around you, the shifts in the market, new trends, emerging technologies, all of that.
Okay, so be aware, be present. What else?
You need to be resilient. Because let's face it, you're going to encounter setbacks. Things won't always go as planned. You need to be able to bounce back from those challenges.
Pick yourself up, dust yourself off, and try again.
Exactly. And then you need to be adaptable. Things change quickly, so you need to be willing to change course, adjust your plans, and try new things. Flexibility is key.
So being rigid and stuck in your ways won't get you very far.
Not in the entrepreneurial world. And then you need to be creative. To come up with novel solutions, think outside the box, and find new ways to approach problems.
The world needs more creative thinkers.
Absolutely. And finally, you need to be able to flourish in the face of uncertainty. Not just survive, but actually thrive in that environment.
That's a tall order, but it sounds like it's essential for entrepreneurs.
It is. And one thing I really appreciated is that the readings also talk about toxic positivity.
Oh yeah, that was interesting. Like, it's okay to not be happy-go-lucky all the time.
Exactly. It's acknowledging that negative emotions are a normal part of the entrepreneurial journey. It's about being realistic, not pretending that everything is always sunshine and rainbows.
And that ties into a larger conversation about personality and potential, right? Like, who can be an entrepreneur?
Right. They contrast this older idea, the Trait School of Psychology, which basically said that entrepreneurs are born with specific personality traits that make them successful.
So you're either born an entrepreneur or you're not.
That was the old way of thinking. But the readings highlight a more modern perspective, the social cognitive perspective, which says that our thoughts, feelings, beliefs, attitudes, these are the things that really drive our actions.
So it's not about being born with the right genes, but rather developing the right mindset.
Exactly. And that's empowering because it means that anyone can learn to be an entrepreneur. It's about cultivating those skills and attitudes. And they talk about the power of the ideal self, like envisioning who you want to be and using that as motivation.
That's a powerful concept. So anyone can be an entrepreneur if they put in the work and develop the right mindset.
That's the key message. And this shift in thinking, this entrepreneurial search-based mindset, it changes the whole way we approach business planning.
Okay, let's talk about that. Because one of the things that always bothered me about traditional business planning is this obsession with the great idea. Like, you need to have this groundbreaking million-dollar idea to even get started.
I know, right? It can be so intimidating. But these search-based methods, they challenge that assumption.
They do. How so?
Well, they essentially say that you don't need to start with this fully formed great idea.
You don't. So what do you start with?
You start with your bird-in-the-hand resources, your curiosity, and a willingness to explore. And they suggest that viable opportunities can be co-created through a structured process.
Okay, so it's less about having a eureka moment and more about a process of discovery and creation.
Exactly. And this is where design thinking and lean startup come in. They provide practical frameworks for this co-creation process.
So design thinking helps you understand the problem, and lean startup helps you test and refine your solution.
You got it. And it's a shift from this idea of spotting opportunities as some kind of magical talent to understanding it as a skill you can develop through these human-centered methods.
It's like anyone can learn to see opportunities if they know where to look and how to look.
Exactly. And the readings mention some big names in this field, like Peter Drucker and Israel Kirzner, who both emphasize the importance of being alert to change and recognizing opportunities that others miss.
So it's not just about being lucky, it's about actively seeking out and creating opportunities.
Right. And what's cool is that when traditional market research and planning fall short, which they often do in uncertain situations, these newer approaches provide a way forward.
Like what you do when your fancy market analysis doesn't give you the answers you need.
That's when design thinking steps in. It helps you explore and define the problem space, replacing the need for a pre-existing great idea and relying solely on traditional market research. And instead of a rigid business plan, you have the business model canvas, which is a more flexible and iterative tool.
So it's a whole new toolkit for navigating uncertainty.
It is. So let's dive into design thinking a bit more. What exactly is it and why is it so important in this context?
Yeah, break it down for us.
Design thinking, at its core, is a human-centered approach to innovation. It's all about understanding the needs, desires, and challenges of your potential customers before you even start thinking about solutions.
So empathy first, solutions later.
Exactly. It's about putting yourself in the shoes of the people you're designing for and really understanding their experiences. And unlike traditional problem solving, which is often very linear, design thinking embraces ambiguity and complexity.
It's okay to not have all the answers up front.
Totally. In fact, it encourages you to embrace the unknown and explore possibilities. It's about asking what if and what might be.
That sounds a lot more fun than just following a set plan.
It is.
Yeah.
And the readings emphasize that learning to think like a designer takes time and practice. It's not something you can just pick up overnight.
So it's a skill you develop over time. What are some of the key elements you typically see in design thinking projects?
Well, most projects use some kind of structured process model. A common one is the Stanford D School's five-step approach: empathize, define, ideate, prototype, and test.
Okay, five steps. What else?
They also involve a lot of back and forth between divergent thinking and convergent thinking. Divergent thinking is about expanding your options, brainstorming, exploring lots of possibilities. Convergent thinking is about narrowing down those options and making choices based on what you've learned.
So it's like expanding and then focusing.
Exactly.
Mm.
And it's often visualized as a diamond or a loop to represent that back and forth process.
I like that visual. What else is crucial?
Well, human centricity is absolutely fundamental. The whole process is focused on the needs and experiences of the people you're designing for.
So it's not about what you think is cool, but what your users actually need and want.
Exactly. And then you have iteration, which is all about trial and error, experimentation, constantly refining your ideas based on feedback. It's not about getting it perfect the first time. It's about learning and improving as you go.
So it's a process of continuous improvement.
It is. And visualization is a big part of that. They use tools like post-it notes and visual mapping to make sense of all the information they gather. And then, of course, there's prototyping and experimentation.
Getting those early ideas out there and testing them in the real world.
Exactly. And they also talk about the importance of creative spaces and multidisciplinary teams, bringing people together from different backgrounds and with different skills to generate more innovative ideas.
So it's a very collaborative approach.
It is. And it's really effective. Now, let's go back to those five steps in the Stanford D School's process.
Yeah, let's break those down a bit more.
So first you have empathize, which is all about understanding your users. You interview them, observe them, immerse yourself in their world.
Really get into their heads and hearts.
Exactly. Then you have define, which is about taking all that information and synthesizing it into a clear problem statement.
Okay, so you go from gathering information to identifying the core issue.
Right. Then you move into ideate, which is where the brainstorming comes in. Yep. You generate lots of potential solutions to the problem you've defined.
The more ideas, the better.
Exactly. And then you have prototype, where you create tangible representations of your ideas. They don't have to be perfect, just something you can show and get feedback on.
So like a rough draft of your solution.
Exactly. And finally, you have test, where you put those prototypes in front of users and see how they react.
Get real-world feedback.
Exactly. And based on that feedback, you go back and iterate, refine your ideas, and improve your solutions.
It's a continuous cycle of learning and improvement. Now, what about the double diamond model they mentioned? How does that fit in?
The double diamond model is a visual representation of the design thinking process. It emphasizes the importance of spending a lot of time understanding the problem before jumping to solutions.
It's like, don't just slap a Band-Aid on a gaping wound.
Exactly. The first diamond is all about the problem space. You expand your understanding through empathy and then focus on defining the core issue. Only then do you move into the second diamond, which is about the solution space. You brainstorm ideas and then prototype and test them.
So it's about being thorough and thoughtful, not rushing into solutions.
Exactly. And it's important to remember that it's not a strictly linear process. You might go back and forth between these stages as you learn more.
Okay, so design thinking is this powerful approach to problem solving and innovation that puts people at the center. Now, how does effectuation tie into all of this?
Effectuation is presented as this new theory for searching, for navigating uncertainty, and for creating opportunities. It's about how expert entrepreneurs actually think and act in the real world.
So it's less about theory and more about practice.
It's based on observing what successful entrepreneurs actually do, not just what the textbooks say. And one of the key ideas is that effectual entrepreneurs don't just discover pre-existing opportunities, they co-create them through their actions and interactions with others.
So it's not about finding a hidden treasure, it's about building something new with the resources you have and the people you know.
Exactly. And it views the future as something that is shaped by human agency and collaboration, not as something that is fixed and predetermined.
So it's about influencing the future, not just predicting it.
Right. And they contrast this with traditional causal-based planning.
Remind me how those differ.
So in causal planning, you start with a specific goal and then figure out the means to achieve that goal.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I want to open a restaurant, so I need to find a location, hire staff, create a menu, etc.
Makes sense.
But in effectual thinking, you start with your means, your bird-in-the-hand resources, and then you explore the possibilities based on what you have and who you know.
So it's more like, I'm a great cook, I have this amazing space, and I know a lot of people who love food. What can I create with that?
Exactly. It's about leveraging your existing assets to create something new. And instead of focusing on competition, you focus on collaboration.
So it's less about beating your rivals and more about working together to create something bigger than yourself.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And they have these five principles that guide effectual thinking.
Mm.
We've already talked about the first one, bird in the hand.
Right. Start with what you have. What are the other four?
The second one is the crazy quilt principle, which emphasizes forming partnerships and co-creating with early customers.
So it's like building a quilt together, everyone contributing their unique pieces to create something beautiful and whole.
That's a great way to think about it. The third principle is lemonade, which is all about embracing surprises and turning challenges into opportunities.
When life gives you lemons, make lemonade.
Exactly. The fourth principle is affordable loss, which is about managing risk by starting small and only investing what you can afford to lose.
So don't bet the farm on your first idea. Test the waters first.
Right. And the fifth principle is pilot in the plane, which is about focusing on what you can control: your time, your energy, your actions.
So don't get bogged down by things you can't influence. Focus on what you can do.
Exactly. And it's interesting that the readings point out that both design thinking and lean startup can be seen as applications of effectual principles.
So they're all connected. Now, one thing that seems really important for both design thinking and effectuation is curiosity, wouldn't you say?
Oh, absolutely. Curiosity is like the fuel for both of these approaches. It's about being open to new information, asking questions, and seeking out new experiences.
And the readings call it the first entrepreneurial attitude.
Right. And they talk about different dimensions of curiosity. Like, are you more interested in specific things, or do you have broader interests? Are you motivated by a desire to understand why things are the way they are? Or are you more drawn to novelty and new experiences?
So there are different ways to be curious.
Exactly. And they also talk about this idea of finding the sweet spot in learning. It's about finding that balance between boredom and stress. If something is too easy, you get bored. If it's too hard, you get stressed. The sweet spot is that zone where you're challenged but not overwhelmed, where you're fully engaged and in a state of flow.
That's where the magic happens.
It is. And the readings talk about zone learning at TMU, Toronto Metropolitan University, as an example of an environment that fosters this kind of learning.
Okay, tell me more about zone learning. What is it?
It's basically this huge entrepreneurship ecosystem at TMU. They have 10 different on-campus incubators called Zones that supports startups and innovation in various fields.
10 different zones. Wow. What kind of zones are there?
Well, they have the DMZ, which focuses on tech startups. They have the biomedical zone for healthcare and life sciences. They have the clean energy zone for sustainable energy solutions. They have the creative innovation studio, which houses the transmedia zone, fashion zone, design and fabrication zone for creative industries. They have the innovation boost zone for deep technology and research-based ventures. They have the legal innovation zone for law and technology. The social venture zone supports businesses with a social impact mission. And the science discovery zone is for early stage exploration of scientific and technological ideas.
Wow, that's a lot of zones. So no matter what your interest is, there's probably a zone for you.
Exactly. And the readings emphasize that it's not just for students who want to start their own businesses. There are many ways to get involved, whether you want to work for a startup, gain entrepreneurial skills, or just connect with like-minded people.
So it's a valuable resource for anyone interested in innovation and entrepreneurship.
It is. And they highlight some specific programs like Experience Ventures, which offers paid internships with innovative companies, and the Zoan 100 course, which teaches students how to develop projects and ventures.
Okay, so zone learning sounds like a pretty amazing opportunity for those connected to TMU. Now, I want to touch on the CEO war stories that the readings share. These are accounts from successful entrepreneurs about their real-world experiences.
Yes, these stories offer a really interesting contrast to the idealized, often sanitized version of entrepreneurship that we sometimes see.
So it's the real deal, warts and all.
Exactly. And one of the key takeaways is that there's no such thing as an overnight success. Most of these entrepreneurs struggled for years, facing countless challenges and setbacks before achieving any kind of significant success.
So it's not about being a genius or having a magic touch. It's about perseverance and grit.
Exactly. And they talk about how they constantly faced crisis moments and never really had enough time for strategic planning.
Sounds stressful.
It can be. And they often had to bootstrap, do more with less, be incredibly resourceful.
So it's not for the faint of heart.
Definitely not. Another common theme was the importance of early customers. They often relied heavily on those initial customers for feedback and revenue.
So build those relationships early on.
Absolutely. And they also talked about how they had multiple near-death experiences along the way.
Wow, so it's a real roller coaster ride.
You can be. And one thing that surprised me was that many of them didn't find true success until the third or fourth iteration of their product or service.
So the first few versions were flops.
They weren't necessarily flops, but they needed a lot of refinement and improvement based on real-world feedback.
So it's about being willing to iterate and learn from your mistakes.
Exactly. And that really highlights the limitations of sticking rigidly to a traditional business plan.
The real world is just too unpredictable for that.
Right. Now, the last part of the readings talks about the impact of artificial intelligence, particularly in relation to this assignment on interview and email communication.
Yeah, how AI is changing the game when it comes to communication.
Exactly. And the assignment emphasizes the importance of professional communication skills, including active listening and error-free writing.
So the basics are still important.
Absolutely. But what's interesting is that they experimented by feeding the assignment prompt into an AI, ChatGPT.
And what happened?
Well, the AI's response was pretty bland and generic. It wasn't bad, but it wasn't great either. It lacks that human touch.
So the AI could meet the minimum requirements, but it couldn't really excel.
Exactly. And the point they make is that in a world where AI can generate decent writing, the bar for human communication has been raised.
We need to be better than the bots.
Exactly. We need to bring something unique to the table, something that AI can't replicate.
So what's the secret sauce?
It's about incorporating nuance, personality, empathy, and genuine connection into our communication. It's about being human, basically.
Okay, so be more human. Got it. And they mentioned an article using ChatGPT, to write good, that offers a different perspective on AI.
Right. They suggest thinking of AI as a talented but easily misled intern or research assistant.
So use it as a tool, but don't rely on it completely.
Exactly. They give examples of how AI can be helpful for brainstorming, summarizing information, turning notes into prose, and even improving existing writing.
So it can be a valuable assistant, but it shouldn't be the one calling the shots.
Right. And the section ends with a quote from Stephen Hawking about the potential dangers of advanced AI, which reinforces the importance of developing uniquely human skills that go beyond what AI can currently do.
Okay, so be aware of the risks, but don't be afraid to use AI as a tool.
That's a good way to put it.
So to wrap things up, we've explored this really important shift from traditional business planning to more flexible search-based approaches like effectuation and design thinking.
We've talked about the importance of starting with what you have, embracing uncertainty, collaborating with others, and being curious.
And we've seen how these new approaches can help entrepreneurs navigate the complexities of the modern world and create opportunities that might not have existed before.
It's a whole new way of thinking about entrepreneurship.
It is, and it's exciting. So for our listeners out there, I want to leave you with a couple of questions to ponder. First, thinking about the challenges you're facing or the new ventures you might be considering, which of the five effectuation principles resonates most strongly with you?
And second, for those connected to TMU, how might you explore the amazing resources and opportunities available through zone learning?
These new entrepreneurial mindsets and methods can be incredibly powerful. Embrace them, experiment with them, and see where they take you.
You might be surprised at what you can achieve.